And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
And that is hammered! Oh, my!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it?
You're listening to The Roundtable with Grant Brisby, Andy McCullough, and Mark Carrig on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode number 46 of The Roundtable. I'm Grant Brisby, here with Andy McCullough, Mark Carrig. Andy, let's start with you. How are you doing today, Andy?
Grant, if I was any better, I'd be you.
Ah, isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth? Mark, how are you doing?
Allergies are terrible. I'm dying.
Dude, no, it's not. Yeah, no.
I'm dying. Like, this is, I'm going to sound like this all day. I am hurting.
It's not okay. Like, I literally have, like, you know, Kleenex next to me. It's, I don't know if that's used or not. It's all over the place. Anyways, okay, well, that's the show, because we're going to call in sick, right?
Did you guys have them as a kid?
I did.
I'm sure I did, but I just never, I always, people say, are you allergic to anything? I'd be like, no. You know, I don't have allergies.
You're allergic to common sense, pal.
Well, I think it's just, once you get past, like, 33, your body's just like, no, we don't work anymore. Like, any minor impediment is going to shut you down for a week. And so, yeah, now I'm like, my back just started to hurt yesterday. Like, my lower back just went out. No reason. I was driving a car and I got out and my back stopped working.
Yeah, it's only going to get better. You know, like, there's like a sweet spot in the 50s where you just start to feel like really good. So we can all look forward to that. Breaking: Andy's back reached the Chiron.
Good one, Brian.
That's a good play on words. You know, last week we got a little hot and bothered about the Oakland Athletics, and lo and behold, there was news, and it's kind of, the Athletics are the talk of baseball right now, but for all the wrong reasons. They have announced that they are in a binding deal to purchase land in Las Vegas. So we have to talk about that. We have to come back and just talk about the Las Vegas Athletics. Do we want to start with Mark, or let him just, like, get all riled up and, like, start humming around like a hummingbird?
I got an idea, Grant. Ready? Hey, Mark, as a lifelong Giants fan, are you glad to have territorial rights now over the Bay Area?
That's good. That's very funny, Andy.
Yeah. I will say, at the top, you know, Major League Baseball wants this, right? The A's want this. Like, the Major League Baseball said they would waive the, you know, sort of relocation fee or whatever it was if they wanted to go to Vegas. Clearly, you know, the late night announcement first, I believe, in the Las Vegas Review Journal, and then subsequently to other outlets like The Athletic, that they're in this binding agreement, right? They're trying to make it sort of presented as like a fait accompli. But our Tim Kawakami had raised a pretty good point, you know, a couple days later. And I think that speaks to his understanding of the issue as someone who's covered sports in the Bay Area for quite some time at an excellent level, is you're betting on John Fisher being able to pull this off, which he has yet to do. And Tim sort of went through, you know, Fremont, San Jose, Howard Terminal, the Coliseum itself. Like, they tend to biff it on the stadium stuff. Now, I do think they've made it so that they're going to really want to try and hammer this through. But it's not a done deal just yet.
I just stumbled on this article from lvsportsbiz.com, right? And it's an excellent, excellent article. I will just read you the headline, and I think it's one of the best headlines I've read at summing a story up. Athletics $500 million Moneyball pitch. A's proposed Las Vegas ballpark without rendering, design architect, funding deal, political leverage. And it just goes through.
Other than that.
Yeah, and it just goes through. Like, look, you have where cities want baseball. You have, like, these groups that are just invested in them. You know, Portland's got a group. Salt Lake City's got a group. You got the Nashville baseball group. Like, Las Vegas doesn't have that. And then you have what the Raiders did before was lay all this groundwork down. They had all these kind of businesses that were propped up, and they had an official sounding name. But they're laying, they're greasing palms, they're shaking hands, kissing babies, doing all that stuff. The A's don't have that. They basically just said, "Coming to Vegas, open arms, baby." And it is a little wild. It's a little wild.
And it's almost like John Fisher is not very competent at anything.
But I mean, come on, he made his money. How could he not be competent to be a billionaire?
No, mommy and daddy made the money. He happened to show up at the right place.
He's so fired up.
You know, like, he was clearly born on third base. I mean, that's, and like, what's he done, right? Like, what's he actually done except, you know, make this half-assed announcement? Like, everything that comes out of the franchise is just more ham-handed, you know, obviously transparent leverage plays, right? Like, it's just constant. It's just an endless stream of them, perhaps including this one. So I don't know if you guys saw it or not, but Mark Davis had some comments about the A's. Basically, I think his hair was fucking the Bay Area. I think a lot of that was just him, I think, venting and sharing frustration with dealing with John Fisher, which obviously was going to impact the Raiders' business. So it's interesting, Grant, that you made that comp about how the Raiders did it and what the A's have done.
Real quick, just with the Raiders, I'm going to do something really strange for this podcast. I'm going to rely on actual information that I procured as a journalist. Okay. Like, I know that's not our brand, and I know that it's not something I do much very often anymore, but I did spend a decent amount of time writing about the idea of baseball in Vegas last year, or I guess the stories came out in January. You know, Stephen Nesbitt and I did kind of a series on, like, the idea of expansion. And so Steve did a story on Portland and Montreal. I did Nashville and Vegas. And the one thing about, you know, the difference between the Raiders and the A's is the Raiders got $750 million in public subsidies for Allegiant Stadium, their stadium. Well, that's why it says stadium. And that was created through, like, a tax on hotel rooms. And part of the appeal with that, you know, I talked to the Clark County Commissioner, Michael Naft, who I believe is in charge of, like, that specific area of the Strip, right? And his thing was like, look, you bring in a stadium, it's more than a stadium. Right. You can host various events. You can have Taylor Swift there. You know, you can do all sorts of shows and things like that. It's not just 8 or 9 football games. Lord knows Mark's Raiders won't be playing in the postseason. And what he said was, it's important that we don't sell ourselves short. We have a more attractive product than I believe anywhere else on the planet. Because of that, we really need to recognize the fact that we have a lot to offer without adding a financial element to that. Or, as the mayor of Las Vegas, Carol Goodman, put it to me, we know our constituents don't want to put on new taxes. So, you know, the public-private partnership, the lack of, you know, sort of funding planning, there's some real hurdles here, it seems like.
Yeah. I mean, especially you've got the Golden Knights going bonkers in the NHL playoffs, and you have the attention. You could see that there's going to be attention paid to a team that's doing well. How much of that sort of attention capital is there to spread around, especially when the A's are, you know, a burning pile of possum hair right now? And so, like, how excited are you going to get the good folks of Las Vegas into the outlying areas?
Yeah, it's not a question of if Vegas will support a team, although I do think it's tougher to support a baseball team in the summer than it is a hockey team in the winter and football, which is like a weekend event. But, like, I think it's not that the city can't support the team. It's just what team is going to show up there? What state are they going to be in? Where's the enthusiasm going to be for it? Like, what, there's not a groundswell of people in Vegas being like, come on, A's, we need you. Their thing is just like, yeah, we're Vegas. You want to come? Like, we got land. Like, you know, sure. If you want to pay for it, whatever. It's free country.
It would fit in with the history of the franchise, wouldn't it? Because I feel
like, here we go.
I mean, honestly, this is
Grant, we can take 10 minutes now, Mark's
gonna bam. We have seen this movie before. We have seen this movie before. I had a line in my column. It's like, They ended up in Oakland. That wasn't a love story. There was a ballpark there built for the Raiders and maybe some baseball team that might be suckered into coming over there. And it's something that would never, ever happen again, by the way, because that was 1968, the American League and National League are competitors, right? Like, it's not like now where there's one overarching entity looking over the sport. They wouldn't allow a place like the Bay Area to have two baseball teams for this reason. They're just that, you know, you make a decent argument that it's not a big enough place to support both of them. You know, the Vegas hurdles, you know, are there. I think the Raiders face similar things too, right? I think there was like some of the funding mechanism is tied to state government. There's somewhat of a deadline here where they've got to get this done in a relatively quick, you know, amount of time. But also the Raiders didn't get it done at that time. They just extended the window, which I guess could happen here too. I mean, that doesn't mean that this is like totally automatic. But, you know, I said this to someone the other day. Like, if you're rooting for chaos, God, wouldn't it be hilarious if they botch this and Vegas is like, you know what, we're not putting up that kind of public money for a ballpark. Forget it. You know, no way. So, you know, what do we do then?
That's what I'm seeing. It's that I'm reading about, you know, there's a lot of quotes in this article from lvsportsbiz.com. And they're just talking about like, your leverage is gone. You have announced that you are the path. And now we're going to go to legislators and be like, all right, so how do we get this $500 million? And you know that $500 million is like code for $750 million. When you're building a ballpark, it's never, the, you know, wow, we're under budget. So you got to go and figure out a way to convince the people with power that, yeah, if this is a good deal for you, because like you said, there's no groundswell of support. So it's not as if the legislators say, okay, hard pass, that there's going to be some backlash against them. You know what I mean? Like they are just, okay, what's in it for us? Really, what's in it for us? I don't know. I think there's still a chance. I think we've got, you know, I own a shirt that's the Tampa Bay Giants. you know, it's, you got stuff like that, so.
Well, Kawakami brings this up in his column too, right? The mayor of Oakland, right away. It's like, well, then these negotiations are done. Says it right away. So on the one hand, you know, if you're not paying attention, it's, oh, they're just quitting. No. They're not going to allow the city to get used as leverage, which is exactly your point right here. So what happens? Not Las Vegas. They're not all the way buttoned up with financing and all that stuff. They make this big announcement. You know what every politician in Southern Nevada is doing right now? Lining up to make sure they get theirs. Because they're going to have to, like, you know, if you're a politician down there that has any kind of sway, like, you're going to have to get on board with this. You're going to make sure that, like, whatever pet project you have gets dealt with so you get on board with this. Because now you know that there isn't another place competing for the club, right? Like, there's certainly a element of just, hey, this is politics now, right? And like, so, you know, the mayor of Oakland, right? Like, it was just like, yeah, we're not doing this anymore. We're not talking about this anymore. I think that's a, you know, big time game changer. And by the way, like in the aftermath of this announcement, unsurprisingly, of course, you get like the sort of, well, this is what really happened. You know, like getting the stories of like the A's, you know, basically ambushing the city and like local officials with the announcement and that sort of thing, which, you know, par for the course, I guess, considering how these jokers have run the club for so long.
Well, I do just want to say that, unlike Mark, my understanding of Nevada politics is not just based on watching the Martin Scorsese classic film Casino. It is not whatever lawless hellscape you're trying to paint it as, Mark.
I figured that there was going to be some yokel like that you have to install as a general manager. Like he's the cousin of some county commissioner.
It's the cousin,
or something.
The guy with the hat. Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Mr. Rothstein. he's now the GM of the A's. Yeah. He comes in wearing like a bolo tie. Like Farhan's like, we're going to get every prospect they have. Yeah, no, I do. One thing just to keep in mind again with Nevada is that the current governor, Joe Lombardo, is believed to be less interested in bringing, you know, implementing taxes to help finance, you know, pro teams compared to his predecessor, Steve Sisolak, who was known as the sports governor. but now they have sports. So, like, you know, it's like they have the Raiders. They, you know, they have the hockey. Like, it's just, yeah, there's just less of, like, when you talk to people in Portland, people in Nashville, they're like, we want Major League Baseball. We would love it. Like, you know, and Vegas, it's sort of like, yeah, you know, like, you do well here. We're Vegas. Lots of stuff does well here.
I think it's really amusing to watch Fisher's negotiations with the A's. And by amusing, I mean, you know, horrible. Because the area, like the Bay Area, has already just drawn a line in the sand that says, we don't like paying for ballparks. The Giants were in Toronto and San Francisco said, okay, see ya. And the Giants were in Tampa because they kept voting down ballot referendums and they kept voting it down and voting it down and voting it down to the point where 23 years ago, when all these other new ballparks are getting built with public money, the Giants did it mostly with private money. And that was 23 years ago when the landscape was much different. Then you add in that Oakland has been burned by public money for a sports team, like burned. The what they gave Al Davis was just
the return. Yeah, the return.
Oh my gosh, that was a disaster.
Disaster
on every front, financially, politically.
Why is Mount Davis so bad? Just curious. Besides aesthetically.
Well, the taxpayer money used to refurbish a stadium for a team that no longer plays here that I think they're still paying for, that's kind of bad.
Yeah, that seems... Well, I don't know, Mark.
No, now you know. That's kind of bad. Like, they built this
horrible... My friend hasn't written a book about this yet where I can read and learn. Jackass.
But I mean...
You don't see me lecturing you because you don't know what happened at WrestleMania 15, okay?
You're yelling at him right now.
Jesus, like, oh, duh, everyone knows that about Mount Davis.
But no, I mean, seriously, like, you could not pick a worse area to start playing little games with, we'll just leave then. It's like, no, it's already, like, the Bay Area has already told you, no, we will help, we will do a lot of things to help, but we ain't paying for it. And maybe Vegas is going to get to that way, too.
Like, there's a lot of noise and emotion and, like, history behind all this stuff and, like, blah, 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 blah. Really, just going to go to where the best deal is. And it's hard for me to envision that the East Bay is where they're going to find the best deal. I just think, like, the environment's not ripe for that. That's to your point, Grant. Like, the, you know, people aren't going to pay, you know, and maybe nor should they, by the way, right? It, you know, to publicly finance billionaires, to build them basically, like, you know, really nice ATMs. So, like, that's what these new ballparks are. They're free ATMs paid for by the taxpayers. And
real estate,
you know,
developments, too, you know? It's not just, like, a ballpark. Right. It's like this. Condos, so, baby. Mixed use.
Mixed use. So, you know, all that stuff. Like, come on. Like, let's not. Like, that's – it's hard to see them being in a position where, you know, you can keep this team unless, of course, like – again, this is, like, the chaos part of it. Man, it would be hilarious to watch a Vegas thing blow up. Hilarious to me. Like, you know, comeuppance. Like, good for you. You screwed up again.
There's got to be some sort of Peter McGowan type to come in and wrestle, you know, and buy the team and be a hero. Be a hero for the next 20 years.
But they're not for sale. Joe Lacob's right. Made news about, you know, made noise about this already. And, like, you know, by the way, like, we talk about the Warriors on this podcast, obviously, all right, because they're the official basketball team of Roundtable Baseball
Warriors.
Podcast.
Warriors!
Okay? But, like, who owned them before this group? Chris Cohen, who might have been one of the top five worst owners in all of professional sports. I mean, took the franchise and ran it into the ground. All right? Like, just on pure incompetence. And, you know, for a lot of the same reasons John Fisher's struggling. Part of business is, you know, building upon relationships and whatever, like building trust, all that stuff. It sure seems like this guy has a problem with that. All right? Welcome to the Warriors Roundtables with the Chiron. It's very good.
Just a question for both you guys, as, you know, lifelong Giants fans, both grew up in the Bay Area, right? Like, so if, like, someone with Steve Cohen's wealth, right, purchased the A's, right, and he said, like, all right, I've listened to the Roundtable, I'm a lifelong Roundtable head, like, I want Grant and Mark to run my franchise and fix this, like, what would you guys do?
Moneyball. You look for the things, you know, like getting on base. You get players you can get on base. It's the
secret. What if I could get you college players in the draft?
No. The key is not to swing the bat.
Right. Right.
Not to swing the bat. Look, you start with what the Giants did, don't you? You get yourself a ballpark, you know, primarily privately financed. Like, because if you're Steve Cohen with that kind of wealth, what's it matter to you? You're buying it, you know, for reasons other than it being a good business deal, because it's not. That's the first thing you do, because all of this begins and ends with the ballpark. So you do it by any means necessary. And if that means what the Giants did, which was clever, right? Like so much of it was privately financed. Now, you know, we say that with the Giants, but also, look, the county, the city kicked in on like infrastructure and like a lot of ancillary things that you need to build a ballpark. So let's not pretend that there's just a bunch of people pooling their money. No. You got to play ball this way too. And like San Francisco politics being what they are, boy, that wasn't easy. So it's really a miracle they pulled it up. But you basically, that's where you start, right? If you got the Steve Cohen part two situation that buys the Oakland A's, step one is build a privately financed ballpark somewhere in the East Bay.
And you do that. You show people that this is not just a fleeting fancy, that you're in it, that this is rooted in Oakland and East Bay pride. It'll sell. It'll sell, man. The East Bay is so hungry to go nuts over a sports team. I keep saying this.
I'll tell you what. There are people listening to this that are rolling their eyes right now.
But no.
Well, because they're going to be like, there's no one in the stands. They were in the playoffs and they never filled the stadium.
Because John Fisher's doing the major league thing where he's, you know, not fixing the toilets, and he's probably inviting possums. He probably has ads on Craigslist saying possums wanted. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you bring in a Steve Cohen and you say, hell yeah, we're here. It will sell, I promise you.
Well, look, and this is the fact, all right? The Athletics have played in Oakland for 55 years or close to whatever. Yeah, I think this is 55 years now. They were competently run for maybe 15, okay? Like that 15 of 55 years. And what happened in those 15 years? Well, 3 American League pennants, a World Series championship, one of the highest payrolls in baseball, a star-studded team that crossed into pop culture, by the way, because there's no one that doesn't know who the Bash Brothers are still to this day with all the baggage and bullshit that those guys bring. The bottom line is you don't need an explanation when you say the Bash Brothers. You know. That shit happened in Oakland, in the golden era of the Oakland A's, from basically the mid-80s until right when Wally Haas passes away and the Raiders come back and destroy the stadium. But look at that time in between there. There's a 5-year period where they're like 2 in the American League in attendance, 3 in the entire game. So don't give me this shit about how they can't support a team. And then to hear Rob Manfred say, well, the attendance has never been outstanding. Incorrect. Okay, you can just change that and say the ownership's never been outstanding aside from the Wally Haas era, that the Haas family owning the club and doing all the things, by the way, you're supposed to do. They were stewards of the team. They took it seriously. They kept it in the Bay Area. It was bought to stay in the Bay Area by local people, by the way, because they understood how important the institution was to the region. And then they treated it that way for the first and last time ever, by the way. It was treated that way. And it's like, and when that happened, guess what? Success that resonates today. That's what happened. So that's, I can't get that out of my mind, that this is not hypothetical. This is not, oh, if you would just do this. They did it. And the results are there. And people remember it. I remember it. All right. You can't tell me that if you brought actual owners in here, like someone bought the club in like this fantasy scenario that Andy's talking about, that, you know, someone with lots of money bought the team and like actually invested in it properly. I think the scenario that you're talking about, Grant, totally happens because it did. Like, this isn't rude. We're not basing this on like hypotheticals. The one time that they did it right, it was awesome. Why couldn't they do it again?
First off, I'd have to say the video paused at an incredibly funny moment where you were just like,
oh no.
It was outstanding. That's going to be a clip.
Oh no.
Second, everything you say is true. And I will add on, Oakland in the 80s, not like a financial powerhouse like it is, at least, you know, with the business and the tech. Like, Oakland is richer than it was in the 80s. Like, you've got richer people, richer residents. You've got the spread has gone out in the East Bay. You've got richer people closer to the ballpark than were there in the 80s. Like, it would work. It would work, man.
I mean, yeah, it would. And like, it would require that kind of stewardship, that kind of ownership. And as we've seen, and this is just, you know, not unique to the Oakland situation, but hey, it's few and far between to have owners like that. okay? To have a club owner that, well, I mean, obviously you would do it, like, you know.
Roundtable heads, let's get together. Yeah, $5 each, Patreon.
Go fund me.
Let's go.
But yeah, I say, oh, that's all it would take. But it's rare, right? It's rare. Look at the transformation of the Giants franchise. People forget that, dude. Not only were they trying to get the hell out of here, the stadium was a dump. It was a frustrating team because they always felt like they never did quite enough to get over the hump. They win a pennant when I was a kid. And that team, like, I mean, no offense, not that good. All right? 89 Giants, like, okay.
You keep but Rick like, Rushel's name out of your mouth.
Hey, I love Rick Rushel. All right? He was my favorite Giant at the time, actually. But, like, Brett Butler may be right there, too. But, like, look, you know, that was sort of their history, right? They had a long period of time where, like, the ownership just wasn't, you know, investing enough in the club, like, and they had a lot of challenges, the ballpark included. So what happened? Well, you got a local consortium that comes in, saves a team, right? Peter McGowan and company. I mean, it was transformational. And I remember it was like it changed immediately, right? Because now they're getting Barry Bonds and Daryl Hamilton and that group. Remember these just a lot of good ballplayers all of a sudden turning up in San Francisco, where, you know, that wasn't necessarily the case with it. I mean, Barry Bonds was like the biggest free agent signing ever at that point, was he not? Or right up there? And they were not playing that arena at all.
Did
right?
You just,
and so,
did you just drop a Barry Bonds and Daryl Hamilton in passing?
The big
I
two.
Did. Yeah, I the did.
Those are the Bash Brothers, right?
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is actually a good place to segue because now we get to turn our attention to a team that did build a new ballpark, took all the goodwill and money from that ballpark and reinvested it into the team, and now they're like a big market team. They're winning. That's right. The Pittsburgh Pirates. It is time because as of this recording, the Pittsburgh Pirates are 16-7. They're playing really, really well. They're pitching. They have a ton of quality starts. There's all these articles now about how are they doing it. Well, they're throwing more breaking balls. They're spinning it this way. They've got the platoon advantage. They got this. They got that. When should we start caring about the Pirates? Has that time passed?
I've got August 1st.
August 1st.
Is when I will pretend to notice. I missed the boat last year on the Orioles, right? Like, I had the Orioles on the pay no mind. Look, it's a big sport. There's a lot going on. I only have so much bandwidth. So, like, the Orioles are just on the pay no mind list for... And to the point where, like, they're an exciting team, and I sort of missed that last year. If that is what's going to happen with the Pirates, I'm willing to suffer that fate again. Because just looking at the, you know, look, it's great that they're playing well, and it's a sign for how ravenous some of these communities are who have been, you know, suggested that, like, they're small market or small revenue or all that sort of stuff, how ravenous the people who live there are for good baseball, and the Pirates fans are having the time of their lives that they're playing well over their skis for, like, 3 weeks, right? Like, and, you know, they signed Brian Reynolds to an extension today, which, like, is the sort of thing that teams should do, and it's kind of should give you a hint of how much money these clubs actually have if they're all of a sudden got, oh, well, you know, we actually have $100 million here if you're interested in taking this below market deal. But, like, looking at it, they do not pass the you have to really squint to see this group still being in. I just don't see it, right? Like, with the Orioles, it's like, okay, that's a first round pick, that's a first round pick, that's a first round pick. With this, it's like, man, they really are getting a lot out of the platoon advantage. And it's just like, I don't foresee Andrew McCutchen 900 OPSing all year.
This Jack Sawinski hate really breaks my heart. It really does.
Connor Joe slander.
You know, Connor Joe was, he was, as you know, former Giant. He was one of the first guys who they got on the waiver wire shuffle, right? They were like, let's find ourselves a Max Muncy.
Yeah, he is a...
He was not Max Muncy.
No, he was an opening. He's part of that cavalcade of opening day left fielders since Barry Bonds left.
Who was the right fielder for that team in 19?
Michael Reed was the opening day.
And Bruce Bochy was like, Bruce Bochy, they're like, what do you think of your outfield? He was like, I don't know. I've never seen him play.
Really? Showed up. They kind of came in with like a week left of spring training. Like,
yeah,
it was not like, oh, we're bringing these guys in from February. It was all of a sudden Connor Joe, Michael Reed.
Bochy didn't even pretend that he liked that. He was just like, we're rosters.
First off, to the Brian Reynolds extension, did you see the terms on this? Like what he's making per year? He's making slightly better than middle reliever money, like toward the end of the contract. It's 6.75, 10 million, 12 million, 14 million, 15, 15, 15, 15, with a team option for 20. That is excessively owner friendly. I like had to look up to see if his agent was related to Bob Nutting, like his agent's Dick Nutting or something. Like, you know,
come on, man. Come on.
Seriously, you can't be, Dick Nutting, really?
You can't be doing stuff like that. Dick this Nutting. Is a family pod.
Unbelievable.
We got little kids looking up to us.
Richard Nutting? You know, the boo, says the Chiron.
No, but seriously. This is the only child labor friendly podcast. Oh, wait, I screwed that up. It was late. Never mind.
Well, listen, I am just saying I can't believe he wants to be in Pittsburgh that bad. Good for him. Good for the fans. But my stars.
This is why, as a GM, you should try and offer deals like this. Right. Because what's he going to, you know, worst case scenario, he says no. And you're just like, OK, we'll just keep going year to year. But yeah, now they've got him for 8 years. He's making like 13 per year. Like, I don't know. I'm not totally sure how good of a player Brian Reynolds is. He's, again, I've never watched a Pirates game. So he seems Adam Eaton-esque in that I look at his baseball reference a couple times a year and I'm like, huh. But, you know, $13 million a year feels like a reasonable rate for like a 4-5 win center fielder. That feels like pretty good, you know. And it's a sign that, look, sometimes players don't want to worry about money. I mean, whatever his motivations are, right? He gets $100 million. How can you criticize a guy for taking $100 million, right? He doesn't have to worry about money ever again for the rest of his life. So, you know, but I think you can see how low the bar is. And, like, Pirates fans are rejoicing right now. They're like, oh my God, like it's a new day. Like Bob Nutting, thank you, you know? And like the bar is so low that it surprises you when certain teams are unwilling to meet it.
I remember the, you know, not to date myself, but the 1997 Pirates, right? They were supposed to be terrible, and they were, you know, cheap, as the Pirates have been and will be. But, like, into August, they were just over 500, and they eventually finished well under 500, but there was still this sense of around baseball just like, oh, good, bravo, Pirates. Like, wow, that the bar was so low for that. Cam Bonifay won Executive of the Year, the Sporting News Executive of the Year, just because his team didn't lose 100 games. It's like, wow, he lost 84. Ooh, chef's kiss. The bar is so low for the Pirates because, again, is Russell Martin still their top free agent outside the organization? Like,
what were the terms on that?
It was like 2 years, $30 million or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that feels...
That's like their biggest outside free agent that they've ever signed. I think Francisco Liriano was a contract extension. They have like a couple of deals that are like 2, 3, 4 years, but nothing. And I don't understand it, especially...
No, Martin was like 2 for $15 million.
Okay, well, that's much worse. Yeah, it's like...
That can't be number one. Wow, I don't know. What was A.J. Burnett? A.J. Burnett had to be.
Well, he was traded there, and then...
Was he?
Yeah.
No, he wasn't.
He was agent. Traded to Pittsburgh.
No, he was not.
He was traded, wasn't he?
No, he was not. He signed as a free agent. This remember, is good podcast stuff. Remember the Phillies didn't want to give him the qualifying offer because he said like he was going to like retire or something?
Okay, so I just Googled biggest free agent contract Pirates history. Unfortunately, this article...
He was traded to the Pirates. What in the world?
It was right before spring training, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What in the Sam Hill? During spring training? He had two stints with the Pirates.
So the first Google result by handsome fella named Grant Brisby talks about... This is dated, so I can't remember. I don't think it's been passed, but... Russell Martin's $17 million guarantee beat the previous record held by Pat Mears, which was 4 years, $15 million. Clint Barmes was number three. That was as of 2012. I think I remember someone sneaking in there over Russell Martin. But yeah, just not – they just don't do free agency, which is the – I don't know. It's like the bare minimum, I think. Like,
if you don't do free agency – then what you need to do is what the Braves, right? We've talked about that so many times, signing these extensions. You take some risk. Because, like, okay, Brian Reynolds gets his deal. But I feel like there's a couple other people on the Pirates roster right now where something like that would make sense, right? So Keller comes to mind. You know, starting pitching's been really good for them early in the year. So that's an extension candidate. If you're being serious about wanting to keep a core together and all that, then maybe that's perhaps a place to start. You don't stop at Brian Reynolds. Of course, that's the issue with the old Buccos, is that they do neither, right? Like, they're not going to play the free agency waters, and the extensions are so far between, it feels like, that when one happens, it's like what Andy said, a huge celebration in Pittsburgh. But to be serious contenders and to do it in a sustainable way, you kind of got to pick one lane or the other. Like, keep some of these guys around or go out and get free agents. And they've done neither a lot of times.
Well, they signed Key Brian Hayes, right? Which, like, we've stopped talking about Key Brian Hayes because he stopped hitting. But he was a top prospect. It seems like he's going to be more like a defense first player. But then it's like when you go through the current roster, right? Like, O'Neill Cruz is out for the year. Who are the – you want to sign Mitch Keller? Like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, Tim Britton actually had a good thing about, like, you know, his extension projections earlier in the year. And the Keller one just seemed like, God, that would be obvious, you know. And, like, what I like about the work Britton does there is that, you know, he's trying to be realistic. He's trying to find, like, you know, places where, you know, you could envision each side kind of doing something like that. So I remember seeing that deal and I can't remember the exact numbers now, but going, geez. Why hasn't that already happened? So that's why I say Keller. Like, it seems like there is some like potential for alignment there.
As much as I want for the Pirates to act like a Major League Baseball team, I also want to not be the guy that's like, well, I should lock up David Bednar to a big long-term deal because right. Relievers are generally a historically great investment. Like, that doesn't make sense either. So I get that part of it. I don't know. One of the Google results for what I just Googled was Rum Bunter, worst free agent contracts in Pittsburgh Pirates history. And number one is amusing. This is a 2023 article. So can you guess what the number one worst free agent contract in Pirates history is?
Jung Ho Gong?
Derek Bell, 2 years, $10 million. Now, but that's the thing. If you're talking about the worst contract in free agent history for the Pirates, a 2 year, $10 million deal is it, because they don't do a lot of free agent, you know, sign. Like, you have like Matt Diaz is on this list. It was like a 1 year deal. They just don't sign players. And I'm not saying that they should go out and become the Padres, but there's got to be some way where you can get guys in on like what the Giants are doing, where they're getting guys like Jock Peterson and Carlos Rodon, and you're getting these short-term deals, and you're betting on your coaching staff, your medical staff to help boost them up and get them back to the players they were. There's not even any of that. There's not even buying low and maybe selling high at the deadline. There's just a whole lot of nothing, and this team right now could have used like a couple of players like that this past offseason. We'd be maybe a little bit more interested in the Pirates.
Derek Bell famously engaged in Operation Shutdown.
Oh yeah.
Which as you may remember, he also I believe at one point when he was playing for the Mets lived on a houseboat, which led to the classic joke that he was an actual pirate. He lived on a boat and stole money.
Oh, that's so good. Oh, we got to bring the 90s back, man. We got to bring the 90s back. Do you guys have anything more to say about the old Pirates, the old Buccos? We got like 7 minutes to fill.
Andy said something, it might have been last week, where none of it matters, but all of it counts. So let's say that like this isn't, you know, truly just like fraudulent. That like this is...
it's fraudulent.
Right, let's just assume that like this is total smoke and it's... like the Pythagorean says that like they're like two wins over what they should be. So it's not total like BS, but like, okay, look, the starting pitchers aren't going to have like, you know, 12 quality starts in the last 13 games all year long. Okay. So that's one, right? But like with a start like this, let's say they start tailing off with the extra, you know, with all the playoff spots now, like how hard would it be for the Pirates after a start like this to just sort of float around on the fringes for a while and kind of wet everybody's whistle for a while, just because they've started pretty well. I mean, they've also, like, they've done what the Rays have done, right? Beaten up on a bunch of really bad teams. They haven't played anybody. I think the difference is, like, the Pirates are winning those games by 2 runs, and the Rays are winning them by 10, okay? Because they're playing Oakland. Anyway, like, full circle. But, like, you know, it's odd to me because, like, I feel like the standard obviously becomes lower for just being able to hang around for a while. So I wonder, like, even if it's not real, like, you know, those poor fans up there have been subjected to a lot of bad baseball recently. Like, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for them to just sort of, you know, give folks a thrill for a while, just because, like, you know, maybe it's easier to do that than ever before to just sort of hang out on the fringes for a bit.
This is a point that I always make. I don't know if I've made it here, if I make it on Bags and Brisby, but there is value to hanging around. Like, you think of it as this binary thing. Postseason? Well, you didn't make the postseason. Well, that's a failure. And that's not. If you are keeping fans engaged in August baseball in Pittsburgh, huge win. Just a huge, that you're getting the chatter, the sports talk radio is calling in about, you know, well, Brian Hayes did this. That's huge. It's valuable. And you can't overlook that part. Are the Pirates going to win the World Series? I'll be the first to say I don't think they will.
First to say it.
Yeah, I'll just put my I'll die on that hill. But like, no, there's value in, and if you get to September, oh my gosh, that's gravy.
I mean, Grant, it's a great point. I mean, look at how the Giants have built up all the goodwill from 2021. I mean, think about how fans, you know, they like total, like, yeah, they're in. They love it.
Well, you know what? To that point, in 2020, they were hanging around until the last pitch of the season, and I think that did have a little bit of carryover effect. The problem with 2022 is that team was just ghastly and boring in all the worst ways. But yeah, no, there is some goodwill built up for that.
Maybe I just haven't forgotten it, but like, you know, probably in my top five sort of moments covering baseball when I would actually still go to games, Andy, was wild card game in Pittsburgh. Was it 2014 or whatever that was?
The Cueto game
drops the ball. Like, dude, that was remarkable. Like that place, like, oh my goodness. You know, I've covered games where the World Series has been won and like history's been made, right? I've seen a 3,000th hit and a 600th homer, the saves record fall. I mean, it's been cool, you know, and like Citi Field gets crazy when the Mets are good. I've been really lucky. But that Pirates, you know, wild card game, the first time they made it back, was something I will never, ever, ever forget. And a lot of it was just because those fans were so hungry for it. You could feel it, you know, like they gave out Stargell stars that night. One of the coaches, I can't remember whom, had some, handing it out to players. Man, that was so cool. Like you could see the fans were like six deep on the bridge. There's a spiral ramp out in left field at the ballpark in Pittsburgh, and you had fans standing on the railings just to kind of crane their heads and get a view of the field. And like it was body on body, and everything that happened, like it would just explode. And of course, when Cueto drops the ball, like, oh my God. So yeah, like, I mean, for me, like anything that gives a chance of seeing something like that again, I'm all for it, you know? So linger around the edges, Buckles, let's do it.
How are you a billionaire watching that environment, seeing that play out organically, and then not just pouncing on it, and now not just taking that goodwill and running with it? How can you go back to the same old day-to-day stuff when you've seen the vision of how it could be? That part is bonkers to me. It's like when the 97 Marlins, when they won the World Series, and there was a lot of interest in Miami about the Marlins. The Marlins were hot. The Marlins were hot. And how do you look at that and go, yeah, oh, can't do that again. That was a
fire sale. The fire sale. Yeah.
I don't see how you don't go out after the 2013 season and say, here's a couple free agents. Let's keep it going, fam.
They gave it a good run for like 3 years in terms of they built up a quality team. They weren't developed. Like the thing with these, with clubs that tear down and then build back up, is one of the things they tend to not do is like hit the second wave. So like you get the first wave of like McCutcheon and Neil Walker and, you know, Gerrit Cole and whomever, right? You remake Charlie Morton and you turn him into something, right? Hit the bell. The Royals with, you know, Hosmer, Kane, Moustakas, whatever, right? Like, and then you have to keep going. You have to keep doing it. You have to build a pitching pipeline like Cleveland has, or just a freakish entire pipeline like the Rays have, right? It's a perpetual sort of thing. And what a lot of these teams get to is a point where this winning cycle or whatever, sort of, you're like, okay, guys are going into free agency. Like, it's going to get tougher. We have to make, you know, okay, we got to tear back down. Whereas I think something that teams like Milwaukee, like Cleveland, like the Rays do is they don't let it get to that point. They look ahead and they make the move. So, like, if you are a fan of the Cleveland Guardians, right, you were probably not thrilled that they traded Francisco Lindor, right? Like, that was probably pretty crummy to experience. But their front office understands how to make those moves, and they're able to get back, you know, like Ahmed Rosario and Andres Jimenez, and like keep it going. It's just those deals are hard to execute, and if you screw them up, if you don't get like a huge return back, like it's gonna be a problem. And so I feel like Pittsburgh kind of made the, you know, just didn't stick the second step in the same way like the Royals didn't stick the second step, if that makes sense.
And it's so hard, isn't it? Like, because it's hard enough to get the first one to go right. Because that's the thing about tanking, guys, right? Like, it's not a guarantee that it's going to work. Like,
right. Look at the Tigers, man.
Right. We've talked about that before.
Oof, man. The Tigers. I mean, Tigers and the Royals. Cheese and rice.
That's probably, we're 45 minutes in, which is usually where we're cut it off. I will say, I don't have a sense of these things, how the podcast is, the metrics, all that stuff. I will say that this is going to be our most popular episode, because when you talk A's and you talk Pirates, people come, man. People come. They tell your friends, if you want A's and Pirates chatter, Baseball Roundtable, baby. This has been episode 46. We'll be back next week to talk about baseball, because that's what we do. Thanks so much for listening. Warriors!
I was very wrong.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.